The roof on the veranda was made of sheets of corrugated metal that allowed any rainwater to flow into the eaves troughs that had given Dean easy foot and hand holds. The roof was steeply angled, but the corrugation made it relatively easy for him to scramble up, even though his aching calf muscles protested.
Damn!
Clinging to the rough texture of the dormitory's outside wall, the youth steadied his breathing and counted the number of windows.
1, 2, 3... Ah! Phaedra!
It seemed a long time since he had left the school with his father and their companions. A long time since he had seen Phaedra, and since she had kissed him, stirring feelings in him that were still strange. Stranger still was that, despite the fact that he was clinging onto the outside of an out-of-bounds building at a school he no longer attended, with aching muscles that felt as though they could give way at any moment, and that he could be discovered by the guards Brody employed as much to keep the sexes apart as to keep the school safe from outside marauders, Dean felt safe, as if he were coming home to a safe place. Dean edged his way across the veranda roof until he was directly underneath. The tip of his nose could touch the sill, and as the window was open, it was a simple matter to push it up and then lift himself up over the sill and into the room. Inside, Dean was immediately aware that things were once again not as they should be. The room was larger than those he remembered, and cleaner.
Huh?
There was virtually nothing in the room except one bed, square against the wall opposite the window. Strange. There were at least 2 occupants to each room in the dormitory buildings.
What's going on here?
The bed was covered with an insect net, draped over the poles that held the net 4 feet above the bed, like a canopy, and falling to the floor, gathering in a pool around the feet of the bed.
Dean, is that you come back again?
Phaedra? I don't know exactly how I got here, but...
It doesn't matter. The important thing is that you're here now, and it's safe.
Safe?
The net over the bed stirred and was pushed aside. Phaedra emerged from the misty depths, and Dean caught his breath as she rose from the bed and stood in front of him. Her long hair perfectly straight, parted in the middle, and tumbling over her shoulders and down over her breasts. She was naked, and Dean felt stirrings within him that were still new enough to be alien. Phaedra stepped forward.
I knew you'd come back one day, Dean. Back to where it's safe.
She held out her hand. Dean hesitated, then raised his own arm to take her hand. Why did she keep saying safe? As Dean's fingers were about to brush against Phaedra's, some instinct made him suddenly pull back his hand. She immediately changed. Her face hardened, seemed to grow old and lined in front of him. She opened her mouth.
Phaedra?
Her hair seemed to disappear without Dean noticing where it had gone, and her hands grew the ugly suckers typical of Mutie Stickies. Her open mouth was filled with sharp, needle-point teeth, and he could smell her fetid breath across the short distance between them. Although shocked, Dean showed the same sharp reactions that had kept his father alive for many long, hard years traversing the Deathlands, and snapped onto his back heel, throwing his balance back to roll with the attack. Phaedra, or whatever it was that had pretended to be her, came forward and pitched into him.
Ah, shit!
He used the creature's momentum and his own back foot balance to throw it over his head. The creature hit the wall. Plaster fell off the wall in chunks, dust filling the air. The sticky came at him, rising from the floor as though it had merely brushed the wall, rushing at him with arms flailing. Dean backed up and readied himself in a combat stance, prepared to take the creature.
Come on, you stoop bitch!
He blocked one wild swing of its arm and followed with a straight-handed thrust at the sticky's exposed right side. His fingers penetrated the soft flesh. He jerked his hand free as quickly as possible, determined not to get stuck in the creature. It pulled back, its thin blood spewing out of the ragged wound. Anger, fear, and pain were just about discernible in the black and glistening eyes as it rushed for Dean once again. Why was there never anything around to be used as a makeshift weapon when a person really needed it? It was a momentary lapse of total concentration that his father would never have made. The sticky was on him a split second before he was fully prepared. flailing arms were just a touch too quick for his defenses, and one of the hands glanced across his face, pulling at his flesh and scoring it.
Damn it!
The pain spurred Dean into complete concentration. He had to end this, now. He lowered himself and dove in underneath the flailing arms, pushing against the sticky with all the power he could muster from his aching calf muscles.
You want some of this?
It was enough to drive them back against the wall. Dean was ready for the impact and gritted his teeth as it jarred every bone in his body. He heard the sickening crunch of splintering bone, the thin snapping sounds of the sticky's ribs giving way. Every breath driven from its unprepared body, it sank to the floor, stunned. Dean stepped forward and took its head in his hands. Tensing his muscles, he jerked the head sharply to the right and then to the left. The thing's neck snapped. The light in its eyes dimmed swiftly and faded. As Dean stepped back, it was no longer a sticky. There, in front of him, with her neck broken and her naked body covered in weals and bruises, blood running over her belly to pool between her thighs, was Phaedra.
Phaedra! Phaedra! No!
The kid's going crazy!
Dean's jerking, howling body lifted itself off the couch, pulling wires and electrodes from his body, the tangles and terminals coming out of the comp console with an alarming amount of sparks and crackles. A small fire broke out, doused immediately by an alarmed white coat with a high-domed forehead and bug eyes. She was completely bald, with her front teeth missing. It would seem that she also had a cleft palate as she uttered a worried yet incomprehensible noise. The only calm personnel in the room were Murphy and Wallace. Sarge Murphy studied the gen very closely.
Desist this ridiculousness. The good book dictates calm in times of emergency, and I will have calm.
Murphy couldn't help but be impressed, and worried. This would be a formidable foe.
Bring the outsider back.
I'm not sure if we can, at least not that quickly.
Dean's eyes were moving wildly behind the closed lids, and his breathing was labored and shallow.
I think you will.
Sir.
Murphy was dubious. And if the kid didn't survive, what hope was there for the old man who lay in the next sick bay, similarly wired up?
Not like this, Doc. Frightening.
Worry not, my sweet. There is no puzzle to which there is not a solution, if you care to think of it. Be it logical or lateral, there is always a path that can be followed.
Don't look to me like there are any paths here at all.
Lori Quint looked at Doc Tanner with wide and uncomprehending eyes.
Dear, dear.
It was ever the way that Lori, as sweet as she was, failed to understand the simplest illusion. He cared deeply for the girl, a fellow waif in a strange land, but at times he couldn't help but find her obtuseness irritating. They were standing in a dark cavern, the only light, if it could be called such, a faint phosphorescent glow from the rocks around them. The cavern seemed to stretch away into an unspecific and threatening darkness, a feeling of fear that was in no way alleviated by the faint roar of a distant gale and the odor of old, burned flesh that hung over them like a curtain. The pearl handle of Lori's Walther PPK-22 blaster glowed softly as it picked up the reflection of the rocks. Her long blonde hair framed her glittering eyes. Doc could see little else of her in the darkness, but as they advanced a few steps, he could hear the clicking of her high heels on the rock floor. In the mind of Dr. Theophilus Tanner, reason struggled to gain the upper hand over the encroachment of fear. Doc knew that the others considered him crazy, sometimes tipping into incoherence. They were correct. He had seen things and been through mind and body wrenching experiences that no one else had shared, and it was unlikely that anyone else would. The things he had seen when the scientists of Operation Kronos had tried to shut him up. He remembered the mewling mess that had been Judge Crater. Perhaps he would have been better off dead than to end up like this, prone to lapses into insanity. For a man with Doc's intelligence, it was a strain to know that he walked a narrow ledge between coherence and madness. He had once heard someone say that stupidity had saved many a man from madness. Perhaps that was true.
Doc, what we gonna do?
Hmm?
I said, what we gonna...
I know, my dear. I heard you the first time. My grasp on sanity may be a little tenuous at times, but my hearing has not suffered. As to the action I propose we take, I would suggest that the best course of action at present is to actually take no action.
You're crazy, Doc.
Doc smiled to himself, but refrained from comment. Slowly, in his mind, the fragments of the puzzle were assembling themselves into a whole. He remembered the fat, evil-looking woman whose throat he had sliced in twain. He remembered the attempt to escape from the redoubt, and the signs of a sudden evacuation by the staff. And then there were the trank darts fired from the strange vehicle. And now, here he was. With Lori? Doc felt the weight of the Lama in his hand, and knew that it was primed to be fired. In his other hand, he held the sword stick. It was a sign to him of the changes that had occurred in his life, that he, an academic by vocation, no longer felt safe unless he had a weapon or two at hand. Particularly now. Particularly as, although she was standing next to him, he knew that Lori had been dead for no little time. A blast of air suddenly hit him like a solid blow to the solar plexus, doubling him over and driving the breath from his body. With a sickening realization, Doc knew that they were facing a foe worse than any Baron, Scavenger, or Mutie. They were facing the implacable force of nature gone wild, distorted by the rad blast of Skydark. It was a foe against which all weapons were useless.
The old dude is looking a bit wired, Dr. Trix.
It's nothing we can't handle, Pryfer Class Baker.
Dr. Trix was the end of a long line of techs for this section, and by some fluke, she was an almost perfect specimen of womanhood. A throwback to a cleaner, less rad-blasted gene pool. She had flowing raven hair and sharp classical features with high cheekbones. As a result, she was the target of lustful attention from every male in the redoubt. At first, Jen Wallace had high hopes of using Trix to start a new gene pool and eradicate some of the problems of inbreeding and Mutie infiltration. Until he discovered the one flaw in Trix's otherwise immaculate makeup, she was sterile. He ruled that she was out of bounds. If she couldn't breed, then he didn't want his men wasting their seed on her. It didn't stop them from trying, though, which made her weary of the attention. It also made any male soldiers assigned to her section slack in their attention to detail. Baker had been commanded by Wallace to inform him of any change in the old man's signs. He was too busy watching Trix move around the lab to really pay much attention to the way in which the monitor screen was registering a rapid variety of signals. Like Dean, studied so carefully in the next room, Doc had REM that was going crazy, and sweat poured from his body as the muscles twitched beneath his skin.
Don't you think you should go and tell the Gen what's happening here?
No, it's nothing. The old dude'll probably kick it, but so what?
I'm not so sure that the Gen will see it that way.
Screw him.
Brave words when he's not here.
Screw him. Although, I'd rather screw you.
Baker moved toward her, and she reached for the small, palm-sized stun gun she'd taken from the R&D repository some time back for just such an occasion.
Good one, Dr. Trix.
Mm-hmm.
Despite this distraction, Dr. Trix still kept an eye on Doc, who had started to make small, whining noises in the back of his throat. The wind had buffeted Doc until he was huddled into a corner of the cavern, hunched into a fetal position, trying to protect as much of his aching body as was possible from the sheer force of the air and the myriad small pebbles and specks of dust and dirt that whipped and stung against exposed skin. His eardrums hurt where the roar of the wind drove pressure against them until he felt that they would burst. And yet, he could still hear Lori screaming over the roar of the wind. It overrode Doc's desire to protect his eyes and ears. He looked up, screwing up his eyes to try to cut down on the amount of dust that could tear at them. The force of the wind was such that his eyes dried almost immediately, and he blinked painfully. The phosphorescence provided enough light for him to see that Lori had been blown along almost to a point where she was hidden by the encroaching maw of darkness.
Please help! Doc!
She was clinging to the rocks, her clothes almost torn from her body, dark flecks on her skin showing where the flesh had been ripped, raising bloody wheels. Doc was sure he could see a pleading light in her eyes, though he shouldn't be able to tell from this distance, in these conditions. He knew that if he didn't go to help her, she would surely die. Yet, she was already dead. Doc knew that. He could recall with an awful clarity the nightmares he still suffered where he saw her consumed by flames. Lori was dead. She couldn't be here. Yet she was. And he couldn't fail her again. Baker advanced on Trix.
What the fuck?
I really think you'd better get the gen. I think this one's ready.
It was almost impossible to describe the sensation of moving against that implacable gale. It was like drowning in air, yet the stones and dirt that whipped against him made it at times seem like fighting against a moving, living wall of rock. Still, Doc pressed on, his wiry frame pushing every ounce of strength he had into forward progress. He got to within a few yards of Lori before he looked up again. What he saw made his dry eyes fill with tears, caused him to pull up dead. There were now three figures being blown into the maw of the tunnel. Lori wasn't one of them.
Emily?
Doc felt as though any sanity he might be clinging to was about to be severed, driven from him by the vision that was now before his eyes, his wife and children being thrown into the darkness by the roar of the gale.